alcoholic. I am going to try to do a little bit better than Philip, but I don't know. My home group is What's the Point group. My sobriety date, I had 13 years of sobriety and thought that I needed to go do some more research. So my new sobriety date is May 7th of 2023. And here we are at steps 8 and 9. We shall want to hold ourselves to the course of admitting the things we have done. Meanwhile, forgiving the wrongs done us, real or fancied, we should avoid extreme judgment, both of ourselves and of others involved. We must not engage, we must not exaggerate our defects or theirs. A quiet, objective view will be our steadfast aim. That's the 12 and 12, page 81 and 82. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be valid reasons for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83. I've had the privilege of hosting Vivian this weekend, and it has been absolutely amazing. I love being able to form the relationships in here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this conference has been amazing to me so far. Vivian, come tell us about 8 and 9.
Thank you so much, honey. I got enough material up here to drive y'all crazy right into the steps, hopefully. My name is Vivian. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. By God's grace, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, strong sponsorship. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have all their numbers on speed dial because I don't want to be left alone for one single minute in this crazy head of mine when I get thinking. And so I came for my drinking and I stay for my thinking. I have a home group, and I'm an active participant in that home group. And I'm so grateful that I get to come to things like this and places like this and be with people like you, because without you, there is no me in this program or in my life. So thank you so much for having me come. I want to thank Bob for all that he does to help us all. Let's give Bob a hand. Has anybody told you they love you today, Bob? Bob started telling me that years ago, and I thought, this is a freak if I've ever met one. And then I got enough time under my belt and realized that man was so sincere, and I just started using that same line every time, everywhere I went. So, you know, it's all about the love, isn't it? It's God's grace. God is love. That's the whole point we're here. That's what brings us here to me. That's what got me here, and that's what holds me here, because I stand with my feet firmly planted in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know what can happen if I turn loose of this thing and not do what we're asked to do here. It's a simple set of actions. And, you know, do I want to be emotionally driven or spiritually guided? That is my whole point in life today. And when I'm emotionally driven, I'm making bad choices, bad decisions, and it never ends well. So when I'm spiritually guided, I'm on the path, and we have a perfect set of solutions to every problem. It says this right in the book, this will solve all our problems. And it has done so for me throughout, since January 3rd, 1994. As I told y'all last night, when I was talking about step one, I came in January 3rd, 1991. I hung out. I came to meetings every day because of a very significant experience I had the night before I came to my first meeting. You know, I was in that place of utter and complete destructive thinking. All I wanted to do was really to put a bullet in my head because I could not stand how I felt and the things I was doing. And it was not so much that I was doing so much to others as what I was doing to me. I could not stop drinking, wanted to quit, couldn't stop. And I would find myself coming in the door after work, walking straight for the freezer, pouring that 100-proof vodka into a tumbler full. There was no more fancy glasses, no more going out socially drinking. This was drinking to survive. And I could not stop. and I wanted to quit, and every single day up to the point I stopped, only by God's grace, that I would walk in the door, pour myself a tumbler full, and that mental obsession was all on me, and I couldn't stop. And then once I get the drink, the physical allergy kicks in, and I want another drink before I can even finish this drink. I don't even like how it tastes, but I love how it feels. And it renders me just, I mean, the shoulders come down, and I take a breath. And then I want another drink and another drink. And I drink till I pass out. I'm a blackout drinker. And that one night, not much different from others, except something very exceptional happened, that words are just render it of little importance to most people. But if you have that experience, you know what I'm talking about. And I ask God, that little knee, that little in the trench prayer, dear God, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to live like this. Please take me. I don't want to live not another minute. And I had thoughts of killing myself. And God did for me what I couldn't do for myself and gave me a vision that was beyond anything I can explain to you, except that it was my whole life flashed in front of me. It was not what Bill had or the bright light experience that he had in the hospital. Something similar, perhaps, because I saw everything that I had known and loved in my life flash before me, and it was like a 3D movie. And something happened that night that has held with me ever since. And for at least 3 months when I got into the program, because I walked into the rooms the next day only because somebody else, and I think all of us have that little angel of mercy that gives us a little nudge, whether it's from the judge or from somebody else, that says, you need to go to a meeting. And I just asked this one person, Vicki, if she would take me to a meeting with her. Never wanted to do what anybody else was telling me to do. Didn't think I needed to stop. Didn't think I needed to do any of this stuff. But I came here, and I knew nothing about alcoholism. But I came in and I sat down and you welcomed me and made me feel comfortable and you loved me until I could learn to love myself. And that's what we get to do for each and every one of us if we keep coming back, you know. And so I did that. I walked in. Come on in, Vivian. We're so glad you're here. We saved you a chair. I didn't quite know what that meant. I know what it means today. I'm glad I've got a seat here. And you know, and I just kept coming back because there was an attraction that I couldn't explain or understand, but it just kept bringing me back day after day. And after about 3 months, and I'm just going to touch on this lightly because I do want to get into 8 and 9, I kept coming back because of what you had. And I didn't even know what that was. I just know that I felt different when I came to be in here with you. And based on what you shared, based on your experience, based on your strength, it was an attraction that I couldn't deny, and I kept coming back every single day. And from the day I stepped across the threshold of Alcoholics Anonymous, the obsession to drink was removed, and I couldn't stop. That past year, I drank every day. Could not stop. Wanted to quit. Couldn't. There's the first miracle. And then I got into the rooms, and I just didn't ever want to stop. Except my little friend came up who never did get this program, Shelley. I love Shelley. She's still out there doing what we do if we don't do this. And she said, you know, there's nothing in this big book that talks about marijuana. So I went, thank you, God, a solution. See, I came just long enough to feel a little better, but I had no solution whatsoever. Didn't have a sponsor. You told me to get a sponsor. And I thought, well, I'll have to start interviewing people and see who might fit, like what, sick with sick. And the only right thing I did was, if the only right thing you can do is just keep coming back, because it's bound to wear off on you, I swear. And so I went on out with Shelley, and then from that point on, I didn't take another drink, but I think I was getting close. After about 2.5 years, this old geezer came up to me and said, Vivian, we know what you're doing. You're picking up chips saying you're sober, and you're not. You're not sober if you're using anything to change how you feel from the neck up, whether you're drinking or not. And I, you know, I had my first surrender when I walked through the doors, and I had my significant life-changing, life-saving surrender. After 2.5 years coming to rooms like this, people like you, and listening to you guys share your experience, strength, and hope, and it wasn't wasted, believe you me, because it kept me coming back. And I hit my knees right in the rooms and surrendered to this program. And I stood up and I made an amends to my home group for picking up chips when I was not really clean and sober. And that's when my life changed. That's when the chink in the armor cracked just enough to let God in to help me pick up these tools and do the things this simple set of instructions, and I picked up, you know, the things you were doing in order to get what you had. So I didn't have a sponsor, but God has ears. And when I made that amends to my home group, that very next day I walked in to get a cup of coffee in the kitchen at my meeting, and I turned and I faced this gentleman who talked incessantly about the fourth step. And, you know, in my little limited thinking, I thought, dear God, doesn't he know anything else? But, I mean, that's exactly what I needed to hear. And he had started sponsoring people, and I had started to notice an incredible difference in how these people looked, how they spoke, how they walked, what they did. It was like a huge rearrangement of who they were. And that's because they were in the deal. They were doing the deal. And I had no intention of asking him to be my sponsor. But this one morning, I'm in there getting a cup of coffee, and I turn and I asked, what I was going to say is, good morning, Dick, how are you? And I said, would you please take me through the fourth step? And he said, I've been waiting for you to ask. And I did not plan to say that. Here are just, if you look back in hindsight, you get to see where God's been working in your life with or without your approval, and you begin to have these significant things happen that you can't explain. I mean, I stepped across the threshold, never had a drink, but I didn't pick up the tools of the program, so I started using something else. But I put that down, and now I've got Dick as a sponsor, and he's relentless. And he said, right after this meeting, young lady, we're going up to that pew, we're going to kneel down, say that third step prayer, and we're going to get busy, we're going to get going here. I am not interested in your drama, your trauma, or your tale of woes. And he said, I'm not a priest and I'm not a therapist. But what you're going to do is we're going to say this prayer, and you're going to use that prayer from this point forward and everything you do from here on. And when you get ready to do this fourth step, you're going to ask God to reveal to you what needs to be on this list. And so I was just willing to take direction at that point, you know, and so glad I did, because then I had another spiritual experience. You see, that's what these whole steps are about, a series of spiritual experiences that will revolutionize your life, transform your life into something you never dreamed of. And that's what happened for me. Without my approval, I just did what he said to do, and things started happening. It was absolutely mind-blowing. I ended up after doing, I can only equate it to one other thing. You know, I have the disease of more. I don't know why I'm supposed to say this, but it's coming up. And I took about 10 hits of acid one night. Not recommended. I remember somebody picking me up and literally taking me to the hospital. And when I got there, you have to sign yourself in. And I couldn't even legibly write anything. And I was there for 10 days. And, you know, that's the kind of thinking I work with. That's what I was reduced to working with. And I tell you what, I found the next sick and suffering person on the ward smoking pot, taking this IV out of his arm and blowing smoke through the IV into the trash can and getting high. After all that we've been through, that didn't stop me from doing one more thing that just took me out of me. You know, those kinds of things remind me of who and what I have the ability to become again and repeat if I'm not careful here. So I don't know why that came up, but it came up. But anyhow, that's how I drink and use. But I surrendered to the program, I took a set of actions. I'm supposed to be timing myself here. Let me get this going. Y'all give me 1 second here. Oh, I don't know if I did this right. Can you make this work for... I've got 19 minutes on there. I know I can't even get started for 19 minutes. Step 8 and 9. That's where the rubber hits the road. That's where the, you know, we hear about the boys, you know, the men and the girls and the women and what we do here and how we do this. And, you know, we have to be reminded over and over again about the fatal progression of our disease. And if we don't do these things, we're just simply going to die. And I have seen a lot of people who have not done this that did die of untreated alcoholism. I've seen a lot of people come in and out of here, hang out for a little bit, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And all of a sudden, they got so well, they didn't have to do what we do here. And they went back out, and they ended up. There was a man who I dearly admired and loved, and his name was Wally. And we used to call it Wally World because he had a rehab. People would go there for the day. It was like a daycare center for alcoholics. Lord knows we need all the help we can get. He helped thousands of people. And at the end of 20 years, they found him in a motel room, and he had blown his head off because he had not worked this program himself. So it's not what I know. It's only what I do here. And so I have to be actively involved. It's recovery's in my feet, not in my head. It's not what I know, and it's not what I think. It's only what I do here. And when someone who is qualified to take me through the steps as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will happen. But I can never be so far from where I need to be. I need to be tethered to you. I need to be in these rooms. I need to be doing the same thing I did when I first got here. And I will continue to do that as long as I'm alive, hopefully. And so the more that I seek this power, the more is revealed to me. We have a fatal progressive disease that will kill me. We have a progressive program that will save our lives, that will make amazing things happen. And as I began to work these steps in my life, when I got hooked up with Dick, he said, "Vivian, we're going to get busy, and we're going to go through this." And I love how he did it. It was simple. It was right to the point. And he said, "We're going to walk through this very quickly. I don't know how much time you have left." It's equivalent to someone laying on a gurney, have an open-heart surgery. And they do the cut, pull your ribs apart, and walk away and said, "Now here's a piece of paper. You go do this and come back in a month or two." You're not going to survive. We don't know how much time each alcoholic has to live through this fatal progressive disease. We better get busy, and we better get going quickly. So don't be dragging this thing out. We need to do it. Bob and Bill didn't drag it out. They did it sometimes in a few hours, sometimes in a day or two. But it worked, and that's why I believe there was so much more success then. But anyway, so we got busy. And he said, "I want you to incorporate that third step prayer every time you work on it." And he was very honest when he said, "Vivian, I don't know." And he's pointing in my head. "I don't know how much is left of your brain to work with in there after all I'd been through." He said, "But if you do what I ask you to do, you will come to know a new everything in your life." And so that's what I just was reduced to following direction. Thank God. So step 1 is the truth about the problem. Step 2 is the truth about the solution. 3 is the truth about what blocks us from experiencing that solution. And 4 through 9 get us unblocked. Steps 10 through 12 keep us unblocked. And I love what it says on page 19 in the book. "After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. And we have a life beyond our wildest imagination." And I love what this program offers to each and every one of us if we just surrender and do the next right indicated thing. Steps 8 and 9. And I want to thank everyone who spoke before me, because it just is a prelude into how miraculous this program. I think every time we step into a meeting, every step we take towards this recovery out of the big book, it's like a step into a miraculous transformation we had not ever even dreamed about. And I've been able to experience that on many levels. And I get to experience it every time I take somebody through the steps. Every time I, and thank God, I have a lot of sick little alcoholics and I can identify. And so we get to work through this together. And I do it exactly how Dick did it for me. I mean, it was only 1 week, and I was ready for a fifth step. Unfortunately, I did not know that he was dying of cancer when he took me through the steps. And I could not give him my fifth step before he had to leave. And God immediately put another person in my life who had become my sponsor for 22 years. And she picked me up, and she lived 5 hours away. So, I mean, I'm talking 30 years ago. Anyway, so I said, I don't know how this is going to work, because I've been told you have to have a sponsor in your home group. Well, I've never had a sponsor in my home group except for Dick, and that was for a week. And so now I've got a sponsor 5 hours away, and she said, I just want you to bring everything you've got written and bring it over to me, and we're going to do 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in a day. And that's what we did. And when I got into steps 8, everything from step 4, all the names on that list just moves over to step 8. And every single person on that 4-step list gets some kind of an amend. It's either a direct amends. It's either a prayer amends where I might not be able to see someone because they want to kill me or something. I had some of those. I was hooked up with some shady characters for a while. And it was advised that I didn't want to. And I'll tell you one that I had the mafia down on my list, and my sponsor said, you will not be making amends to them. So I didn't have to go make amends to them, thank God. But anyway, I was, you know, just full flight from reality when I was out there running and gunning, literally. And so every name on that 4-step list now is on my 8-step list. And we make a list of all persons we had harmed and came willing to make amends to them all. We have direct amends. We have the prayer amends. We have a letter. When I can't, especially if they've been deceased, and I make a letter and I go read the letter to them, hopefully at the grave or wherever is appropriate for you, and then financial amends. And I'm still making some financial amends after a lot of years because I did a lot of damage out there, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time telling you what all the shenanigans I was up to, but, you know, the more I do here, the better I feel, so I got through that under the direction of my sponsor, and when I did my 5th step with her, the first person on that list was God. I had a huge resentment towards God. I did not have the God that I was raised with. I went to parochial school, and I learned about that God. I had an education around that God, and I had a very fearful God, and God to me was, you know, up on the cross and in the mosaic and the beautiful stained glass windows and the cathedrals and churches that I went to. And I did not have a personal relationship with God. I just had a fearful God. And I was so resentful when I got to the program and made that list, because God should not have allowed things that happened to little girls that should never have happened. And I resented him so much for not protecting me, because I thought that's what God was supposed to do. And so God allowed a lot of things to happen in my life that should never have happened. And I blamed him for everything and all the problems I had in my life. The second person on that list was my mom. I blame my mom for not ever saying or encouraging me to do anything different. I don't recall her giving me any promotions towards ambitions, like go to college, do this, do that. She wanted me to get married and get out of that house, and I don't blame her. It was a better deal for her all the way around. And but anyway, so I was so, and then I said, I don't ever remember my mom telling me she loved me. I never had a dad in my life. To this day, I'm really not sure who my dad was. I think my mother just loved alcoholics, and so she had 3 kids by 3 different men. And you know what? We didn't even care about it. It just didn't, you know, I realized there was a difference, but it was not something that really came up till I did step work and around it. But I said she never once told me she loved me. And so my sponsor, being wise as she was, she said to me, Vivian, did your mother put food on your table? Did she put clothes on your back? Did she put a roof over your head? And I said, yes, she absolutely did all those things. She said, maybe that's the only way she could tell you she loved you, because if she had known better, she would have done better. And that resentment just disappeared in just that little bit of knowledge from my sponsor. And it was an amazing spiritual experience around that. I was able to make an amends to my mom to the day she died, and we had a beautiful relationship. Prior to that, I'd never had a relationship with her. And so the third person on that list was my little 9-year-old daughter. Her name was Katina Teresa. As a direct result of my drinking and the actions I took one day when I went to go over and pick her up and wanted to spend one day with her trying to be the parent she deserved to have, both she and my son, for years I had been out there doing what I was doing, running and gunning, and I kept going less and less to visit with those kids. You know, and they were 7 and 9 when I walked out of that house. I walked out of that house one day to pursue drinking and doing the things I wanted to do with the people I wanted to be with, and just blotting out the memory of their existence. And I left them at the door. And when I could get it together to go back and try to be the mom they deserved to have, I just couldn't pull it together. And more and less, I began to not show up because I couldn't do it. I'd go to the mall to get Christmas presents or birthday presents, and I'd end up in the bar and never make it. 2 days later, the holiday's over with. That's what drinking did to me. It took away everything that I held dear, everything I loved more than life itself, and all the things that we all wish to have. And I had nothing left by the time I came to you. But my little daughter, I picked her up one day to go to the spend a day. I finally got my act together. I went over to pick her up, and she couldn't wait to get in the car. And we went up to the lake and spent the day at the lake. And yeah, I was drinking that day. I was not in a blackout. And on the way home, we had a car accident. And as a result of that, the actions that I took that day, my little 9-year-old daughter died. And so did I. And I ended up in the hospital. And I remember sitting up in the corner of an operating room looking at what was happening with my body on this gurney. And there were doctors, a team of doctors around trying to save my life. And I was sitting in the corner, and I was sitting up there with my daughter. And she said, "Mom, you can't stay here. You have to go back." And I did not want to go back. I wanted to stay that with her, with that peace and that serenity that I experienced, being just at that moment with her. And I was right back in my body again. And I was in the hospital because the car turned over on top of me and everything from the waist up was broken. And how I survived is a miracle. And I drank for another 10, 15 years after that. I drank to forget. I drank to die, really. Until I came to you and you gave me a reason to live. And because of those amends, which my sponsor said, and when I gave her what happened to me, I said, "It was just an accident. I just blew it off." And she said, "No, Vivian, that was not an accident. You caused that accident by what you did that day." And that was the hardest chunk of truth I've ever had to digest. And I wanted to die. I didn't want to live after that truth. It just broke me so open. I just couldn't fathom surviving that. And it was so devastating. And she said to me, "We will go to the grave," which I had never gone. I was brought up on manslaughter charges, by the way. And by God's grace, I never went to jail. I don't understand why. I don't even remember any of it. I was in a blackout for the whole time, for the next decade or more. And by the time I got to my sponsor at the time, and she said, "We will make you write a letter to your daughter, and we will go to the grave, and you'll read that letter." And I couldn't see possibly how that would make any difference in anything that I was getting ready to do here, because I wished for the end one more time. Stark raving sober. And she said, "Tomorrow we're going to go to that graveyard," and I'd never been. I could not go. It was like 108 degrees that day up on a hill in Columbia, South Carolina, and And I found that little grave site, and it took about an hour or so to look for and find. And my sponsor went with me, and she said, "We don't have to do this alone. You do this together, shoulder to shoulder. We will do this together." And so I had this letter of amends to write that I had written out for my little girl. And as I said, "Michael, I don't even know what to say or do," she said, "Just read that letter." And so I began to read that letter. And amazing things started happening that I can't see explained to this day. But I know that it was God. And again, every time I take a step towards doing one more step in this program, God is revealed. And so that's why it's so important to continue, keep doing, don't ever stop. So I took a set of actions that day I didn't want to do, and amazing things happened. And as I began to read that letter, as hot as it was, a little wind started just engulfing us. My hair was standing straight back, and I looked at my sponsor, and I said, "I don't know what's happening here." She said, "Just keep reading the letter." So, so I kept reading the letter. And you don't ever want to do anything at all by yourself when it comes to this step. And so I read that letter, and I had come to a place so long ago that the Catholic God that I had come to know as a small child was not working for me. And I had started working with some shamans and medicine women and people of that nature, and I started adapting Native American spiritual concepts and beliefs. To this day, I still have a lot of those beliefs and life-saving, and, you know, Mother Earth, Father Sky. These things are so beautiful. I'm a nature lover. I love animals. All that seemed to be so natural. And so as I was reading the letter to my daughter, I began to feel this presence of God. I felt forgiveness for the first time, and I can't describe. There were no words, but I felt my heart open up, and I felt the presence of God, and I felt the forgiveness that we all seek and want to have when we do these kinds of things. And I looked up, and there was an eagle flying over us. And according to Native American spiritual concepts of belief, eagles are as a return of one's personal power. And it was, again, you know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I felt an amazing relief that day that I have never felt before, and I've certainly felt it after, but at that moment I felt just the presence of God and the presence of my daughter that I can't explain to you, and I still have it. She's with me right here today. And so this is really a story about our story and how we, you know, how she brought me to God through all of this destructive behavior. And so I sat there on the grave after I finished reading that letter. The wind dissipated, and I'm just sitting alone there. And my sponsor had gone back to the car because it was so hot. And I began to cry like I've never. I just broke open that day for the first time in all those years. And my little daughter spoke to me that day. She said, "Mom, I have a life. And so do you. Now go on out there and live it." And I know today that part of my amends to her and to anyone who has gone down that road is to be able to carry a message of hope and recovery, because no matter where you've been, what you've done, there is hope and recovery. And there is a joy that is beyond understanding that comes from these devastating things. And I sat there totally in shock about what all had just happened. And a little ladybug landed on my skirt, and I'm sitting there, and I can't even speak because I'm speechless because of what just happened. And this little ladybug is crawling around on my skirt. My little 9-year-old daughter said in her voice, "Mom, that's one of my favorite little creatures." And that year, I got the thought from that day that I should start a women's retreat and call it the Ladybug Roundup. And we're coming up on our 28th year this year. So you ladies are all invited. Would love to have you come. You're next on the list. I want to tell you, as a result of taking a set of actions contrary to how I think, feel, and believe, altered my life in such a way that I've embraced a God of my misunderstanding. And I don't ever hope to understand God because it's always revealing to me in different ways. I have a trickster God showing up in different ways. Now, I studied Native American spiritual concepts and belief because it's kind of important to embrace something when you get here. I was doing the Native American thing, and I loved and still love all of those principles and values, and I still use a lot of that today. I sage a lot. But anyway, I started being, I think we're all seekers. I really do. I just think that we all are seekers when we get here. And I started studying Buddhism and Sufism and Sikhism. They all just attracted me to their practices. And I finally, my minister at, and here's a, it's this is funny. He was a little Jewish guy in New York, 18 years old. He reads this book called The Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, moves to San Francisco and lives with Paramahansa, became a disciple. Then he decided one day he was going to go to Kansas, like Dorothy, and become a Unity minister. You can't make this stuff up. And so from right out of ministerial school, he came to where I live, and he spoke often about Paramahansa Yogananda, and I became very interested in that, so I started reading that book. Very thick book. It took me forever to read it. But it's about a man who was like Jesus in many ways. He was a guru, and he taught spiritual principles and values. And all of that has been fascinating and interesting to me, and I use all of it. But I remember sitting down one day after going through a six-week intensive course on how to properly meditate. And according to those, to the Hindu principles, you have to do certain mantras and certain, positions, and it's a lot of breath work. And so I adapted all of that. So the first time I'm sitting there, and I'm doing the breath work, and I'm doing all this, and I'm sitting in, I'm just waiting for something to happen, and nothing happens, and nothing happens. I mean, this shit's not working. It's literally what I said. Not very spiritual, I know. The next thing that happened blew my mind. Boom, Jesus Christ appeared to me, and just like you and me sitting here right now, and kissed me on my forehead. And it blew my mind. So that happens when we take actions contrary to how we think, feel, and believe, and we just watch for the miracles because they're going to happen. And that was just everything I needed to see and experience to know without a shadow of a doubt there is a God in each and every one of us just waiting to help us in any way possible. All I have to do is be willing to do the work and follow the directions, because all of that happened as a direct result of taking the actions in these steps out of the big book, out of the black print on the white page in the blue book. And it altered my life forever. So I get to carry that message as a result. I no longer live like the four horsemen. It talks about terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I don't experience that. I just look for the miracles because they happen every day. I come to meetings like this and I see people, if you're here for one day, one week, one month, one year, are just coming or coming back, just keep coming, don't stop, because this thing works. This is a program of miracles and transformation beyond your understanding. If you understand it, you need to get a sponsor, because something ain't right if you're thinking you know what's going on here. I don't have to know what's going on. I just have to take actions contrary to what I think, feel, and believe. And I've been able to, I don't know what time we have here. Plenty of time. Well, I don't know if I want to talk plenty more time. I think I've done what I needed to do here today. And carry a message of hope and recovery as a direct result. I don't find it necessary to want to take my life or yours. And, and I was always vacillating between homicide and suicide when I was out there. I don't have to live like that today, and I'm just found a better way to live my life. I have friends all over the world today as a director, and I tell you what, if you're not doing Zoom, shame on you. It has changed my life. I don't care how old you are. Get somebody to help you press a button. It'll work. And I have found people all over this world. We have now been given a worldwide fellowship. So that, and there is a meeting every single hour of every single day. There's no more excuses. So I do more today because I can. And I'm going to keep coming back because I haven't found it necessary to do anything different because this stuff works. And it's life-changing and life-giving. And I hope you'll always come back. Just don't leave. Get up with a sponsor. Do what you need to do here and keep coming back because I, as Bob always says, if nobody's told you today, I love you and I'm glad you're here and thanks for coming. I don't know how much time I talk.